Welcome back. So what I'd like to do to begin is ask you a question and then take some questions or comments, and then before we venture into another experiential practice. So my question to you that you can answer if you like, and we'll pass around the mic though, please, is were you able to pay attention to your body as you were having your lunch and talking and walking around? And if so, what did you notice that might be new for you? Yes, here. There's a person in front. Thank you.
Okay, so I'm a Pilates trainer, so I'm very much in my body. All of this work is, you know, stuff that I bring into my teaching, into my practice. So if I weren't here today, I would have been moving and running around and riding my bike all around San Francisco and, you know, doing that kind of work. So The contrast is what I've really been noticing. Mm-hmm. And even on my lunch break, just taking the time to slow down and do the work I would usually be doing. I did a little, you know, just mini mat workout just to open up my body, stretch out a little bit. And I noticed it was a little bit broader, a little bit deeper. You know, I didn't have to, like, bring myself down because I was already there, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then went for a walk and decided it would be, you know, I wanted to feel walking barefoot, walking on the dirt, and just taking more time to notice. And again, even though this is something that I already practice, like, being in an environment and having spent the last few hours really focusing on this stuff and getting the sort of proprioception warm-up, right, and then doing the actual work after that, mm-hmm. I think was what kind of shifted things.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because there's always something new to experience and more to know.
That's why I'm here.
Yeah. Yeah. And and we want to just know that about, no matter how long we've been practicing, like, okay, but we're changing all the time. So what are we getting to know? It's a really good question to ask ourselves. You know, like, what we know is even shifting and changing, right? So there's always new levels and nuance and subtleties to become aware of. So that's great. Thank you. Anything about, yes, over here? Take you, and then there's somebody in the front row, and then we'll move on.
I was hiking in the hills, and I made the mistake of heading towards some shade and slid down on my side for about 15 feet unexpectedly.
Ow.
And so the first thing I noticed was I'm sliding, and I noticed something was coming off my wrist, and I thought, well, just try to pay attention to what's happening. Mm-hmm. Then I stopped moving, and I checked my body. Are you okay? Yes, and then I decided not to get upset because I was okay. So that was very unexpected. I mean, We don't fall down that often, hopefully. And then I had to figure out how to get back up, which was rather challenging, but I just took it one step at a time and did a lot of breathing, and then I'm back here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. It was.
And I'm glad you're okay.
Yeah.
And do you think that that anything that we've done so far was helpful? You know, I mean, you said you checked in with yourself, your body, and you were okay, so you chose not really to get upset about it. Yeah. Is that new? Or?
I think that I was already so relaxed from all the meditation.
Yeah.
I was a little bit more in the moment. I didn't anticipate freaking out. I don't fall down very often, so I'm not really that prepared mentally.
Sure.
But I noticed that I felt calmer than normal, I think is what I'm saying.
Wow, yeah. And just those little I think that this is part of why practice is important, is that, and also to what you were saying, is that it does allow us for just a moment of pause. Like, oh, what's going on here? And to then make a choice. The choices, the space for choice is larger. Generally during the day when we're just going about whatever it is that we're doing, the space for choice can be so quick that we don't even know that we have one. And so part of this, it's almost like we extend time in a way when we slow down and practice a little bit more, which is a beautiful thing. Yeah, thank you. I'm glad you're all right. There was one, did you have something you wanted to add? There's one more person before. It was here.
Okay. I'm asking.
Yeah, okay. Let's go here. And then, yeah. Okay, so let's go back there then. She changed her mind.
I don't feel like a very fearful person generally. I don't feel a lot of fear, I think, in my day-to-day, or I'm privileged in not having a lot of body pain because I'm generally pretty healthy. But what was really cool was the exercise that we did at the very beginning, which was just to kind of feel what was happening and what would make you want to, I think, maybe move or just sense what it was. And I realized in that, that the silliest things, or you can't call them silly, but the things that would seem the least scary, I was like, my knee hurt, is that okay? And it was almost like came from a fear place in a weird
yes.
way. And I was like, am I scared that my knee hurts? And I was like, I think so, because when I felt love or just I feel sort of peaceful, I'm cool, everything's cool.
Yeah.
But the smallest things like that, and then even an itch, I was like, is it okay that I'm not scratching that? Do you know what I mean? Like every
yes,
those
I
things
do.
Are like, is that normal?
Yes, this is great.
But it was cool.
It's very cool. Because, you know, usually if your knee hurts, you're going to get gangrene. Yeah. Or you have a headache and you have a brain tumor. You know, it's Woody Allen personified. And that's great. Because that's the trajectory of a human mind. That's not just yours. It's not just mine. It's not just Woody Allen's. It's everybody's to varying degrees, right? Am I okay? Did I hurt myself?
And it's your brain's job to protect you.
Yes. It's the brain's job to protect us, of course. But then when we see how overdeveloped that protection has gotten to where, oh, is it okay? I don't scratch the itch. Do you know? Something that's kind of mundane. That's where a sense of humor, which you obviously have brought to it, is helpful. And also not to take it personally. Eventually, yeah. Yeah. Everything goes away eventually. That's the reality of life. But generally, we don't wait around to watch its lifespan. Anything, whether it be a sensation, a mood, a feeling, a thought. We are already projected into when's it going to end, or I hope it never does. That's attachment and aversion. I want more. I don't want any. I want to push. I want to invite more in, and I want to hold on to it. Please don't stop. I love this. And there's a holding, trying to grasp around, hold in, attachment. Or there's, I don't want any of this, and a pushing away. It can't leave fast enough. I hate it. Get it out of here. Push, 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 aversion. That's called clinging. That's the second noble truth. And this is where the conceptual hand comes in. Because what is clinging? What is attachment and aversion come under the umbrella of clinging? So the Buddha, in his four noble truths, as best as I understand it, laid it out such that life has displeasure, discomfort, It's not always fun. That's the first truth that we can count on. And the second truth is, well, there are reasons for that. Why is life not what we want it to be? Well, because. Or why is it not always pleasurable? Or why is it not always fun? Or why is it not always as we want it to be? Why is there suffering in life? Well, because we cling. We have attachments or aversions to whatever comes into our awareness, whatever we're conscious of. And then he goes on and says, hey, guess what? There can be an end to this. And then everybody says, really? You mean I can be happy? Most of the time, if not all the time, I can be free from discomfort. And that's when our ears perk up. And he says, yeah. And here's how. And he lays out the Eightfold Path, which means that we actually have to do it. So a lot of times we don't want to hear that last part. We just want to hear that there's an end to discomfort, to suffering. Yeah, that's natural. That's normal. That's understandable, isn't it? But the second truth of attachment or aversion or clinging is quite interesting from a somatic perspective. And that's why I read Uchami Roshi's quote about the conceptual hand. Because what is the somatic experience of attachment or aversion? Tensing up, yeah, that's one. But the somatic experience of it.
Like being, you know, needing, grasping onto a physical feeling in the body.
How does that manifest, though? Okay, so she said, because you don't have a mic, she said a physical grasping of not having a drug
or needing
a drug, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yes, and what's the physical experience of that? What's the physical experience of pleasure? Or a physical experience of pleasure?
Nervous system calming down.
Okay.
Temporarily.
Nervous system calms down temporarily. And what does that feel like? So I want you to tease this open even more.
Let's see. Muscles are...
There you go. Muscles relax.
Less in my head, less obsessive thoughts.
That's back in your mind.
Okay.
You see where are we going with this? That's interesting, isn't it?
Yes,
but what's the somatic experience of it? Do you see? Can you guys see how this is challenging, right? To tease this apart. That was a really good example because this is where we go, you know. So the somatic experience of having what we want can create what? Space, relaxation, or the nervous system. I would say probably two common elements is spaciousness and softness. The opposite of that is contraction, holding tightly, clinging around, pushing away. There's a lot of effort in that, right? So this is where we get a little bit...
But spaciousness to me seems conceptual. That's not somatic.
Well, that's why I said, well, it is if you equate spaciousness with softness because space is open and soft. Somatically, usually.
I mean, that doesn't seem like a sensation in the body.
Softness doesn't?
No, softness does, but not spaciousness.
Okay. Yeah, I guess that's relative.
Yeah.
So, okay, so well, let's let spaciousness go for you, and then we'll just go to softness. Because you can't cling on something if you're soft. Right? Or relax so much.
I mean, are you talking about a specific experience now, or are you just... No,
I think in general. In general, yeah. Probably not, yeah. I mean, and this comes up to our experience, right? So where I'm leading is, that the tightening of the conceptual hand, as was in our example, yeah? And when I asked you to hold on to an uncomfortable emotion in your hand, that wasn't soft and relaxed, right? Usually. Maybe for some of you it was. It depends on what you were thinking about. But generally, clinging, attachment or aversion, creates some volition of contraction, either pushing away or holding on to. So if we're attuned to the body, or the more we attune to our own bodies, the more we start to sense an either withdrawing of, like, don't give me any more of this, it's uncomfortable, or get out of here, pushing out, that's uncomfortable, or don't leave, don't go, last forever, I'm going to hold it as long as I can, attachment sort of feeling, there's some movement and tightening around that. And if we can sense how that manifests for each of us, then we have more choice, because it's not about what we're thinking, but it's about what the body is telling us. And the way that we address the body is in a lot of different form, or can come in a lot of different ways. And that's what we're moving through today a little bit, is some examples of how to be in the body more, and this afternoon, how to work with what we experience. So of course it's going to be different for all of us, but part of this path, or this journey towards a really more felt sense, more somatic experience of emotion, is understanding when we're thinking about something and when we're feeling it in the body. And what the two differences are, what the difference, main differences are in that. And then depending on what we notice, then we have skillful means or tools to work with what we're experiencing. And that's what we're going to be doing more of now. Does that make sense so far? Are there any questions around that? Yeah, so in the back here.
So as you were talking with the person up there, I mean, can you call craving? Does craving have a physicality?
Yeah.
And so I think of the craving, the lusting for whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then I eat it, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then I get relief.
Yes.
And then I crave, and I eat it, and I relief.
And that's a cycle of suffering, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm. Clinging, craving, same. So wait, hold on to the mic for a second. Because when you start to have a craving, can you identify any physical sensations around it?
I don't think so. I think that's part of why I'm here, because okay. I go right to frustration, guilt, kind of all this sort of panicking that then makes up all kinds of stories about whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'm so good at just knowing what the feeling is or the sense, and then just staying with it without having to make up some story about it.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's why we like the word yet, right? Because, I mean, this is more new to experience ourselves like this. Fortunately, there's a lot of research around introspection and somatic experience and felt sense, and, you know, what some of us know. It's being shown, it's being proven to be valid. Thank you very much. We already knew that. But anyway, to be valid, and different places that it's very helpful. And one of the places that being in the body is helpful is with craving, especially with addiction, and of any kind, you know. So addiction takes lots of different forms. Addiction in the mind you can also feel eventually. But so what I want to suggest is that if you continue to slow down and do some practice a little bit every day, meditation, mindfulness practice, however that could be for you, is that you instigate these little pauses that we were just referring to. So you have a little bit more of a gap of choice. Was it Viktor Frankl? Some of you, I'm sure, know this quote, between cause, stimulus and response, yeah. There's just a little space in there. And it's what I'm suggesting also with the body. The body will sense and feel something, and it'll start to try to tell you what it is. But generally, we're already in the mind going to, I'm going to eat it, I'm going to do it, and then I'm going to feel crappy around it. We're already there so quickly that we haven't noticed that there actually is a little bit of a few moments in there that we can slow that whole process down and come into the body. So what I would challenge you to do in a good way, not challenge like, you know, in a negative way, but what I would suggest that you try to do is the next time you have a craving is to see if you can feel it manifesting. Where's the tight grip? Because that's generally what it'll feel like, something like a tightening, because you're uncomfortable. So when we're uncomfortable, we want to solve it some way. We want to scratch the itch. We want to move the leg. We want to move the neck. We want to check the phone. We want to do something, you know, that gets us out of the what we think might be unsafe, even though it isn't. But we want to get out of discomfort. And if we can stay with the sensations of that, and that's what we'll do a little bit around this afternoon, then it doesn't have to, the wave doesn't have to come up, crest, and hit the beach. We've caught it as it's coming up before it's formed. So the body will be telling you something. Usually with this kind of experience, it's a tightening somewhere or discomfort, like it could be your belly or your shoulders or your jaw or your eyebrows or something. It'll start to tighten. And if you, the more you sensitize yourself to your body, the more you'll feel that as it begins rather than after the wave has hit the beach. And then there's all this really uncomfortable emotion to deal with. So just keep saying not yet and keep practicing, and that'll help a lot. That'll help a lot. It's funny how practice slows time down in a sense, because what speeds up time is thinking. You know, we think we're already at the door before we're at the door, and so that you don't even feel the steps going to the door. It's like, oh, that's done. But if we pay attention to each moment, we can savor them, or we can at least investigate them or be present for them. And that's a big difference. So that's a really good thing to bring in. One more, and then, because I want to try some exercises, and then can you guys hold your questions till later? Is that okay? Or is it a sort of a burning question? You can hold it. Or hold it tightly. So, these are really good questions, and I live in Berkeley, just so you know, in case there's not enough time. What I'd like us to try is a dyad experiment next, to see if we can actually put these thoughts and suggestions into some action and really sense them. So if you're not comfortable working in a pair with someone else, then of course, because of what I told you earlier about my own disposition, then you can journal if you like. However, it's pretty revealing, pretty interesting to do this with another person. So I'll let you choose. This dyad that we're going to do is a repeating question. Some of you have done that, this kind of practice before. And so what it consists of, and then I'll talk you through it when we pair up, is that somebody will, I'll give you a question to ask. And one person is going to ask the question of their partner. And so you'll say the question, and the person that you're with will answer it, and then you say thank you, pause for a sec, say thank you, and then you ask it again, and the person will answer it again, and then you ask it again, and the person will answer it again. Now, the reason that we do this over and over again is because it's like the answers get deeper. So it's like journaling. It's a reflection practice, but it's a reflection in community practice. It's a reflection with another person. So that has a lot of benefits to it. But you know how, like, when you meet somebody and they say, how are you? And this is social, so I'm making a little bit of fun around this. But and you'll say, fine. And you're really not. And if they say, especially if it's a friend, and they say, really, how are you? Yeah, I'm fine, I'm fine. Really, how are you? Well, how are you? Not so good. Now tell me about how you are. And there we, if we, you know, if we can, then we express it a little bit more. So this dyad, the repeating question, is sort of like that. It's like, yeah, I know how you are when you say, hey, how are you? You know, I can see that, but I can, what's under that? What's under that? And part of the interesting thing, I think, about any spiritual practice can be that we're uncovering the layers that bind us so that we're more and more free. More free in heart, more free in body, more free in mind. So if you're up for this, then I would ask that you team up with someone that's close to you or that you know, whatever. Turn towards that person, get set up. You can also move in the back if you want to take up a little bit more space and have privacy. And then as soon as we're set up, I'll tell you a little bit more. Do you want to do it? And if you want to do this and you don't have a partner, raise your hand. Anybody partnerless that wants one? And some of you are going to, does anybody need paper if you want to journal or something? Do you need paper? Okay, is everybody set with a partner? Lanny, do you need a partner? Anybody need a partner? Oh, okay. Great. That's pretty easy. All right. So why doesn't somebody in your pair just volunteer to be the asker of the question first? Who would like to do that? Okay. Got that. That's easy. Okay. So there are a few challenges to this. One is not to get too loud, because, you know, there are a lot of us in the room. But this is what I'd like you to really try to keep in mind, because this will tie into what we've been doing, and hopefully it will just make a little bit more sense, is that we've been experiencing maybe for our whole lives up until now, or even just today, how we're not necessarily sensing the body so much, that we're more in the thinking mind, or we're feeling, and our thoughts and feelings are, you know, a little bit interconnected or tangled up, and we can't even really tease those two aspects of experience apart yet. And generally speaking, during our waking hours, we're fairly busy and we're engaged. You know, we're doing things, right? And so we don't generally take the time to be introspective or have introception, a sense of what's going on internally. It's also called inner awareness. We don't necessarily have a real keen sense of what's going on in the body as we're interacting in the world, right? So this particular exercise is to point out how we can be engaged somewhat, either answering the question or asking the question and listening, and be in the body at the same time. Now, it's somewhat like rubbing your belly and patting your head. It might be a little awkward, and you may not really do it as well as you'd like to yet. It just takes some practice, okay? So if you're writing it down, what you'll do is you'll take the question and write it, and then answer it and answer it and answer it over and over again, okay? And if you're doing it with, you know, another human being, another person, it's the same idea. So when you're asking the question and then listening, as you're listening, see if you can stay in your body. Because we're very empathetic. And we're always sensing each other, but we usually don't pay attention to that. Okay, so let's see if we can. And if you're answering the question, as you're answering it or writing it or pondering it, however, you know, it's going to show up for you, as you're doing that, notice what's coming in your body. Notice the sensations that are arising. Okay? This, I just want to say, is not easy because we're not trained to do it yet. This is a first step for some of you to do this. Okay? Make sense? Okay. And then I'm going to time you so that we're doing asking and answering. Each person will have an opportunity to answer, ask and answer, 5 minutes. Okay? Now, as you're listening or as you're speaking, there's no crosstalk. And the person that's asking the question, try not to use visual language. So when we say there's no crosstalk, there can still be things like, you know, because we're empathetic, you know, we want, I get it, me and you, yeah, you know, and there's beauty in that, it really is, but there's also beauty in not doing that. So I don't want you to be like a stiff stick, but try not to respond visually so much either. Because the less, it's like sitting in meditation, the less movement there is of the physical body and the less talking there is, the more absorption and consciousness there's going to be, at least at first, okay? So someone's going to ask the question, and please don't rearrange the question. Just keep asking it the same way over and over again. You can change your intonation if you want, but don't rearrange the question. Your partner will answer it, and you can say one sentence. You can say 10 sentences. It doesn't matter. When you're done, you stop. The person that asked the question says, thank you, and then asks it again. So it's a repeating question. The question is, see, I already got you in pairs before I told you the question. The question that I'd like you to ask is, what brings you great joy? What brings you great joy? Okay? So I'm going to time it, and then I'll ring the bell at five minutes, and then you're going to sit in silence and just sense, and then we'll switch. Okay? So please begin. you can finish your thoughts. And then drop into silence. And just as you can hear the ball resonate, there's a resonance going on in your body. And this is what we want to attune to. So drop into your body and notice how it feels, whether you were asking or answering. You can close your eyes if you want. But drop in and sense. What do you notice? See if you can stay with sensations rather than analyzing them, thinking about them. Just what do you sense? Okay, and then allow your eyes to open. And you can thank your partner. And we're going to do the same question and switch roles with it. So the asker will be now the person that answers. Same question, and I'll time it again. What brings you great joy? So hang on, I'm going to time it. Just wait for the shuffling to happen here. Okay, and let's begin again. Okay, so you can finish up your sentence if you like. And then drop into silence. So don't shake it up too much. So we'll have a chance to talk to each other in a moment. So just drop in. Drop down, drop in. Check in, feel, sense, be with. What is this like in your body now? What is the reverberation? The resonance, the vibration, the reverberation, the sense of what just happened. How can you feel it in the body? And as you're sensing, you might notice things shift and change when you pay attention to them. And then allow your eyes to open again, and you can thank your partner if you want. Okay. So, don't separate yet. We have one more question. So there's an experience in listening to someone. Now, I couldn't tell you what that is, because for each of us, it's different. But when someone is expressing what brings them joy, and you're listening to that, there can be an experience in the body. We can tune into that. Joy shifts the body, whether we're speaking about it or hearing about it. It can be the same. There's delight in it. How do we feel that? There's a shared experience. How do we sense that? So pausing afterwards and feeling that resonating in the body is really important, because like anything that we practice over time, we will become one with it. We will embody it. It'll be part of our way of being. Yeah? So we're going to ask another question, and this is going to shift the whole... You already know what the question is. Oh, it's going to shift the whole experience. Some of you have already done a lot of dyad practice, you know. that if you're being asked two questions, that they're going to be very different in tone. You know where the doors are, right? So... No. I mentioned that at the beginning. I wasn't going to mention it again. You know, this is very important, is to have the experience of how what we're saying and what we're listening to affects our bodies. Because if we can become more and more sensitized, as I've been saying, then we start to feel things shift and change as they're shifting and changing before they're arisen, or before we've lost ourselves in it, been taken over by whatever it is. So the second question will offer a totally different flavor, tone, feeling. And the second question that I'd like you to ask each other, answer and ask, is what stands in the way of your joy? What stands in the way of your joy? Okay? And just as intently or as actively as you felt what the person was answering in your own body or what you're saying in your own body, please do it here again so that you can start to sense the difference in tonality of both something that is pleasant and something that may not be pleasant or as pleasant. We want to know both, because being with what is knowing the bitter and the sweet and everything in between, because that gives us the freedom to be with no matter what. Okay? So what stands in the way of joy? We're going to shift, so whoever just answered will be the asker. And does somebody want a partner that for the second part that didn't have one? Okay. So what I would suggest if you're partnerless or you've chosen not to do this half of it is that you just write it out, or you can also just do it quietly yourself. Okay? All right. So, let's begin again. So please try not to crosstalk, just answer and ask. Saved by the Bell, maybe, huh? Okay, so let's drop in and notice. And if it's easier for you to be with what you're sensing with your eyes open, then please keep your eyes open. That's okay. You don't have to close your eyes. What's key is just to notice how your body responded and reacted to what you were saying or what you were hearing. Okay, and then allow your eyes to open. Thank your partner. Okay. And then we're going to switch. And this is delicate, I understand. It's very delicate. But it's about getting information and understanding that will hopefully be of benefit. So, switch what gets in the way, what stands in the way of joy. Okay, 5 minutes. Please begin. Okay. So before you talk too much, drop in. We don't want to shake it up yet. So don't shake up the experience yet by talking. I know it's so tempting, and we want to, and we will. But for a moment, just sense. For a few moments, just feel. What's in your body now? What are the sensations? You can even notice your breath, if that's changed or shifted at all. Okay, and then allow your eyes to open, and you can thank your partner. It's quite a lot to do with somebody, isn't it? Okay, and then let's hear some of what you noticed, because, and this can be really interesting in that we hear things that might sound familiar, which is, I think, always really helpful. Whether we just did that by ourselves or with another person, we're not alone in it. And there's going to be this common element to anything that's said. And that is coming there, each of the things that we'll hear are coming from another human being like us. So, okay, we have here, and then there was somebody also behind you. So the closest mic, do you want to go there and then we'll come to you? Oh, and oh, excuse me, one moment. Don't reveal anything that your partner said unless you've already asked them, okay? Just for privacy. Please.
So the feeling of, I mean, it was difficult to communicate and feel at the same time. Mm-hmm. The first question, at the end, I was like, I didn't know what my body was feeling. Mm-hmm. And in the second answer, I was trying to feel, but I was jabbering. So yeah. It was not, that was hard, like, for me.
Yeah. Anybody else feel that? Yeah. It's a skill. It's a skill, and all skills can be developed and cultivated. Thank goodness. So, I certainly didn't experience what was going on internally when I was talking to people for some time. But now I can. So, the internal awareness and the outer or external awareness are almost like two different lenses in the beginning. And it's really like this, you know, it's patting the head and rubbing the belly. One might be easier than the other, and then put them together. And so sometimes it's okay to shift the focus out and then shift the focus in and to try it in different ways. So this is the first time that you've done this?
Second time.
Oh, it might take three. Maybe four. But what I would suggest is that, well, and I'll give you a bunch of suggestions in a minute, but one suggestion is to notice when you're by yourself and you're reading something, is to pause, maybe put it down and feel or sense. or we're going to be doing a little walking meditation. Pause, sense. So that you're allowing yourself, when you have the time and the freedom to do this, the luxury to do this, that you're instigating these pauses to drop down and feel and sense, and then continue to do whatever it was you were doing. Because then that becomes part of what you're used to. It becomes conditioned. It's a habit. It's a skillful habit, a pattern. And then doing it on the spot will happen more and more over time. So it's like we sit and formally meditate. We formally practice to train the mind to pay attention, to stay present, yeah? So that we are informally practicing more and more of the day. And so little by little, the distinction between, I mean, there's always going to be some distinction between formal and informal practice, a little bit, but it's less and less as we practice longer and longer. Yeah.
And the other question I had is, like, if you know that you are going to have a difficult feeling, like, based on your past experience or... how do you do some pre-work to lessen that? I think that's the whole point of the workshop, right?
I wouldn't say it's the whole point, but it can be part of it, sure.
Yes.
There'll probably be, you know, like a close to 100 points in here, what we think, but maybe not that many, but close. Say the question one more time and put the mic up to your mouth a little bit more. So I don't want to rephrase it for you quite yet. So go ahead and ask again if you don't mind.
So based on your past experience, it could be a feeling that you're almost anticipating.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do some pre-work to avoid it or handle it better, I guess?
Mm-hmm. Partially what we do is we begin to titrate the feelings. We begin to sense and feel, you know, so you'll have a situation where you are getting this familiar feeling, let's say, or even before you anticipate it, it's there, and you feel it for a moment, and then you turn towards something that's easier for you, especially since it sounds like it might not be comfortable. And so it's also called penduluming. And so you're pendulating. I make up words sometimes too. But anyway, so you're going back and forth. You're tolerating your being with, but just for short periods so that you're building that muscle in a sense. You're building or increasing your capacity in another sense to be with things that aren't so comfortable, whether it's people, places, things, or all. You know, or you know, what's in your body, what's in your mind, what's in your heart. By being with things, especially, you know, and it doesn't always have to be unpleasant, because some of us have difficulty being with the pleasant. And some of you might have experienced that with the joy. It can be just as difficult. I can speak to that. So, but what we want to be able to do is be with whatever it is that we're wanting to or choosing to or needing to be, really, for longer and longer periods of time. Not all at once. So you don't dive into a pool or jump into a pool before you know how to swim, hopefully. Someone gives you a little instruction and they're there with you. Or, you know, when you learn to ride a bike, your friend or your family member is with you on the side. And then before you know it, you're riding that bike. Like, whoa, where is everybody? Whoa, I can do it on my own. So we're building that skill, we're building that capacity. So little moments of staying with and really feeling it, not just thinking about it, not just knowing, oh God, here I am again, or whatever the, you know, the story or the script is that we'll tell ourselves, and I'm not dismissing it, but to actually sense it in the body, sense what those sensations are. And that will help. So that the next time it's familiar and you felt it before and you know you're going to be okay. Yeah, thank you. So we had a question up front. There.
Or share experience,
yeah.
I guess it's sort of...
Hang on.
I think it's pretty similar. Just I noticed that I was able to, when we dropped in, I felt more after listening rather than giving.
Yeah. That's, yes. Anybody else sense that, that you felt more listening than speaking? Yeah. Because we tend to go out when we're talking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I even felt that it was hard for me to, I was feeling all these feelings around like how I was being perceived rather than feeling the joy that I was supposed to be reminded of, of talking about what brings me joy.
Well, thanks for that transparency, because that's not uncommon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this is a proper place for questions, but since I got the mic. I was just wondering if there are specific places that we feel certain feelings, like anxiety maybe in the chest and like disgust. I don't know.
It's a great question, and I actually brought a little chart, which is very small, but I will talk about that.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Let me pull the chart out so that I don't forget. So there's a, actually, energetically, there's a lifting up to go out that we can start to sense. It's part volition, so there's some movement in it. And it's sometimes, and we're going to play around a little bit with this in terms of breath. But one way you might be able to relate to going up and out is that you've left your body, right? So when, remember when we stood up after doing the body scan, and could some of you feel that you were a little heavier, or that you felt your feet a little more, or that your breath was a little lower in your body? Sometimes that's a common experience of that. Or after doing a meditation practice, you might feel a little more grounded. Now, that's literal. It's not just metaphoric. So when we're grounded, we literally feel the earth beneath our feet. And when we're grounded, we're present. When we're groundless, we feel shaky. We're up somewhere else. And so energetically, it's the same. When we're not grounded, when we're actively outward, either moving to the next task, or, you know, sometimes when we feel self-conscious, it could be, I don't want to be in here. What are they thinking of me? That's a lifting up into the thinking mind, and it's less in the body. There's all sorts of reasons why we're not grounded and why we lift up and out. But just sensing that, we can draw ourselves. This is what I want to show you visually. Draw ourselves back in eventually. And so we're less up and out. And so it's a sense of where your breath is. If you're feeling your feet, or if you're sitting in a chair, the contact of the chair or the floor or the earth outside or something like that will bring you back into present moment experience and back into the somatic experience or the felt sense of the body. And so again, it's a matter of practice, because we're just not used to doing that yet. And that's why we're doing this today, you know, and that's why that's why I think this is important work, and also quite complementary to other types of skillful means that we already have at our disposal. So we want to feel when we're lifting up and out. Can you even sense that as I say it? So the inner and outer experience that I was gesturing, I want to just tell you that right now, because it relates to that. Have a teacher, Mingyur Rinpoche, some of you might have heard of him, and actually it was his brother, Sokni Rinpoche, that used to teach this. They're both my teachers. That we have what can be called an internal experience of things. And he used to gesture it like this. going in with his hand, yeah? And that inner experience is also called inner awareness. So in contemplative practices, we know it as inner awareness. It's been around, you know, the Buddha talked about it. We also, in more current times, call it introception. That's the more scientific term for it. And I think introception is just starting to be recognized in more fullness than it. Interception used to be thought of as just being able to sense your heartbeat or your breath, but it's much more than that. It's actually knowing thoughts and feelings, emotions plus sensations, how everything interweaves, which is what we're doing today. So we can be internally aware, and usually that's facilitated more easily when we have our eyes closed or when we're in formal meditation practice or some sort of spiritual practice like that, where we can turn our awareness inside and pay attention to what we're feeling, what we're sensing, even what we're thinking. The external awareness is, it's also proprioceptive, but the external awareness is what we're aware of going on around us all the time. And we're pretty good at that. I mean, yeah, sure, we'll check out from time to time, of course. But we're usually more aware of what's going on out here. And you see what my body does when I'm doing that? You see how I'm pitching forward? Exactly. And less aware of what's going on in here.
What is that?
Inner and outer awareness. It can be also including proprioception. Mm-hmm. Or introception is the inner awareness. It's more than proprioception, but that's what I said, yeah. So the key, I think, is to start to sense the difference. This is in my experience. This is why I've been teaching these kinds of practices for 30 years or more, is because these are available to us. We just haven't really been, they haven't been pointed out in too much yet. And so when we're externally aware, generally what happens is that we're up and out of the body. So we're not necessarily feeling the feet on the floor. We're not necessarily even noticing our legs. We might have tightened our belly and held our breath and we don't even notice that yet. Familiar? We could be out the door and to our next appointment or to something more pleasant like watching TV or whatever it is that we think is pleasant as we're sitting here feeling uncomfortable. Or we feel uncomfortable for a second and it's like, okay, what's for dinner? Who can I call? Right? So we're into the next. It's what's called bhavana or becoming. Because we're not quite comfortable. It's the craving wave. We're not quite comfortable exactly with where we are. We don't stop and feel it long enough to see that it has a lifespan. We're already on to the next. And so what we're training ourselves to do, and you know, hopefully this will be something that piques your interest and you'll stay with a little bit, because a day is really just a little minor taste, and we are doing, you know, a bunch of different things. But to be internally aware and externally aware at the same time is a skill. It's cultivated, it's developed, it's not natural for all of us. I was never taught to do it. I doubt you were. But it's more of a spiritual practice. It's more of a contemplative practice. And, you know, thank goodness there are them, these practices. So lifting up and going out, especially in terms of things like being self-conscious. I mean, I know that one. You guys, probably many of you know that, what it's like to be self-conscious. You're not really in your body because you're already judging what somebody else is thinking, so you're in another world, in a sense. Yeah. So it's about coming back in. That's why when I was asking you to feel the resonance, I was saying drop down, drop back in. Because this is the sense of it, if you were to look at it visually. And so when I would first started practicing on retreats, I would sense, and the way I know this, and also, I just recently heard, and I don't know her teaching, but that Judith Blackstone teaches something similar around this kind of thing. But what I would notice when I was practicing on retreat is that when I was thinking, I was leaning forward like this. And so I would feel myself do that, and I would imagine that I was a bird and I'd fold my wings. And there was a softness and a dropping, mostly of my belly and my breath, that I could sense. And then I'd feel myself thinking, and my chin would lift, and I'd lift, come forward. And then I'd feel myself pull myself just visually, kind of energetically, back down and in, and start again. And what was really interesting is that this one of these Tibetan teachers that I'm talking about, he said, you know, the difference, there's a difference in the posture between Westerners and people from the East in terms of how they sit and meditate. And of course, you know, because I've come in through the door of the body, it's very interesting to me to hear something like this, and my ears peak up. And he said, yeah, most Westerners practice like this. And most people from the East practice like this. Now that's extreme, right? Complete relaxation, you know, almost like, you know, sleeping. And sometimes they were. Or hyper like, oh my God, what are we thinking, you know? That tends to be our culture a little bit more. And I'm glad you're laughing, because we all share elements of that, right? So this is where the humor comes in. So both inner and outer awareness is possible, but it takes a little time. And to notice where we go out is the most important thing. That's why we did the what brings us joy and what stands in the way. Yes, I have a question or a comment back there.
Hi, do you mind talking to us a little bit about triggers? Because one could generally feel pretty great, and then all of a sudden something happens. It could be, you know, your daughter says something that makes you feel like she's upset, and you feel great compassion or whatever, and that might trigger you in some way. So I think we do feel triggers in our chest or wherever. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think the struggle is how to navigate that moment from the actual trigger to the response, because it could happen so quickly.
Exactly.
Where when we're meditating, we have time to kind of...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's sort of a little bit relating to the question that was first asked about knowing how you're going to be feeling. You know, so a trigger generally takes us to a similar place over and over again. And triggers can, I mean, I think the general connotation is that they're unpleasant. But, you know, some things can be pleasant and we don't want to feel that too. So I just want to keep that in mind. First of all, I would say that we get better at noticing when something triggers us and not following through and taking it to the formal reaction stage that we have gotten used to or known. But it doesn't mean that we're not triggered. So even, you know, I mean, I've had the privilege and the honor of hanging around with some really amazing teachers. And they all have reaction and responses, but maybe not as heightened or as pronounced as we might. Because, and I know this even over time of my own practice, is that I will have a reaction to certain things, of course, but I don't act on them in the same way, and they don't manifest in the same way. So what we're really doing by slowing down and feeling and slowing down and examining is knowing, oh, here it comes, noticing it, feeling it, and allowing it to have that very short little lifespan that it'll have when it's recognized, when it's felt. And so it's not that we don't get knocked off our feet, we will, but the recovery time is really fast, so that maybe you just lose your balance rather than getting knocked off. So again, just it's not that we won't have a reaction to some things. I mean, we're normal people. We're not enlightened yet. And so we're going to, there are going to be certain things that cause a rise. Yeah. Which is an interesting word to use, a rise. But we don't necessarily, after training ourselves, we don't necessarily follow it to its end expression anymore.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I think that there's a misunderstanding sometimes with spiritual practice that we're going to be flatlined, you know, or that dispassionate means no passion, or that equanimity means not caring, losing any kind of passion. That's not true at all. But it does mean that we know how to balance, and that we're not lost in what we're feeling anymore so much or for as long.
I wonder if it'd be helpful to try to identify what the things are that trigger you the most, because I think for me it's always like some form of injustice, or what I perceive to be an injustice.
Right.
It might be a complete justice, who knows. But if I perceive it to be an injustice, then I bunch up. But maybe if I could just
yes.
identify the things that happen the most in that moment where it happens, I could just think injustice and take a deep breath, and that signals to me
yeah.
that's something I don't do well with, so maybe take a minute or step back or something. You know,
I think that's a very good
not
idea.
Not everything triggers me in the world. There's probably a small number.
Yeah, but also noticing, okay, when you say injustice, can you sense that in your body right now?
Yeah.
You can? Where do you feel it?
Right.
What does it do?
It's bunched up.
Okay, so then...
And I want to protect, and I want to...
Right, that's the afterwards, right? That's the bubbling of
yeah,
the experience.
Yeah.
So, but just go into the bunch right now and see if you can either breathe into it or imagine that you're bringing a mist in there, just a fog or a mist. Take a moment. And maybe that mist softens it a little. And then can you feel anything happen if it softens below there? Can you describe that?
The stretching, the open, the it dispersing, I guess.
Okay.
The breathing helps open it, and then
right.
the mist gives it lightness somehow,
yeah.
and then the stretching. And that didn't take much time.
Good.
So
right.
that's interesting.
Exactly.
Okay.
So it can happen pretty quickly, but it takes a little time. You know, obviously you've done some different kinds of practice before. So this... You know, it will happen faster and faster, but it's never going to be that we walk around and everything's all okay. There is injustice in the world. There are things that need compassionate action, absolutely. But do we need to get lost in anger, or do we need to contract, or do we need to shut down or lose ourselves in the midst of that? No, we don't. So thank you for that. Let's take two more. Yeah. So, mic up here. And then we'll do a little more practice.
One thing that's been very personal for me related to somatic experience.
Can you bring it up a little bit?
One thing that's been personal for me related to somatic experience is that I frequently, well, I don't know how frequently, but at times I feel my heart beating.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been working with meditation and breathing and trying to calm it. More frequently, I'm finding out I now have high blood pressure, and I would very much like not to take blood pressure medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to be able to calm the situation down so I don't have to. And I'm just wondering if there's any suggestions related to that.
Mm. Yeah. Go lower. So there's some things you can do in the belly and in the pelvic floor that will help. And I'm happy to talk to you about that another time.
Thank
yeah.
you.
Sometimes we try to go directly into the place itself. So like into your heart, let's say. And I think that what we want to also include is that we want to move around, come in the side, open a window, go to the ground, do something, approach something differently, not always directly. And especially in that case, I would say yes. And I know a pretty good amount about the heart because I had heart surgery. So I'd be happy to tell you some other things around that. I've had lots of surgery. You can talk to me about almost any place in the body. I've been cut up so many times, it's not even funny. So we have another comment. I don't know that everybody in the back can hear you. I know you, I can hear you, but. Thank you.
I was glad we did the partner work. I find that staying a little bit aware or mindful in interaction, or like I'm a teacher, in the workday,
yeah,
during the interaction is just incredibly challenging. And you mentioned like maybe being aware of your feet or trying to come back into your breath. I was wondering if you have any like suggestions for regular practices around this, because I find, wow, things can go from 1 to 100 when you're not aware of it, because like you're just on for 6 hours or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're going to be doing some breathing practice and some walking practice, so that might help. And as much as we might not want to hear this, but it's, I know I didn't in the beginning, it's doing something over and over and over and over and over and over again that really embodies it. And
like the formal practice that then goes into the...
Yeah. So even, a formal practice, an informal practice, but just something, because it takes the system a while to embrace, embody, digest, and assimilate. We want to respect that. You know, our minds think we should get something right away, and sometimes we do. You know, a lot of times we do. But it doesn't become a skillful habit right away. That takes time. I mean, I think it's something like we need 6 weeks of constant something or other to get it really patterned and in there, conditioned. So we want to respect that, know that. And it takes a lot of consistency and repetition. Yeah, but hopefully some of the breathing things that we'll do will help. Okay. Let me just show you this chart that you might not be able to see, but I brought it because there was a very interesting study in 2013 that asked people to describe areas of the body where they would feel different emotions. And this was over a pretty big control group, a pretty sizable control group, and even in different countries. And there were some commonalities, which was really interesting, like anger was generally expressed as orange and yellow up from the rib cage up into the head, and sometimes down the arms. Fear was less yellow but red, and it started around here and moved up. Neutral was dark, like the whole body was just a darker tone. Anxiety was sort of red, but with this big yellow ball right here. Love was very similar to all of it, which was really interesting. It lit up. It was the same. Love and happiness looked pretty similar. And, you know, welcome. I'll leave this chart up here when we're done. And also, if you want to email me, I can send you the reference. But love was just red, yellow, all pretty evenly around. So there are these common ways of experiencing emotion, and there are also some real wonderful individual expressions of it. And so just because something is common, we don't want to assume that we have to feel the same. Okay? Because we're unique. We have our similarities, yeah, lots of them, but we also have our uniqueness. So allow for that. And this is where curiosity is helpful when we're examining the body, when we're being reflective like this and noticing things, is that we want to have a sense of curiosity, like, oh, well, how does my mind, body, heart notice this or register this or respond to this or react to this? Wow, that's interesting. Without taking it as like, oh, I'm so bad, or I'm the worst, or nobody else. And that's generally what we do. We're not so bad. We're not the worst. And there was Mr. Duffy, who James Joyce wrote about. And I think this is that Mr. Duffy was probably not very fun to be around, but a hoot at the same time. So in the Dubliners, James Joyce wrote, Mr. Duffy lived a little distance from his own body, regarding his own acts with double side glasses. He had an odd autobiographical habit, which led him to compose his mind from time to time in a short sentence about himself, containing a subject in the third person and a predicate in the past tense. There's somebody in the government that does this now. He gave his alms to beggars and walked firmly, carrying a stout hazel cane. He abhorred anything which betokened physical or mental disorder. He wasn't really around, but he was a cranky old guy, I think. Maybe he was a cranky young guy, too. I don't know how old he was. But he lived a little distance from his own body with double side glasses. You know, it's like... So we're not alone. Hopefully, we're not as bad as Mr. Duffy, but we're certainly not alone. Pema Chodron, who you probably heard of, the wonderful Western teacher trained in the Tibetan Shambhala tradition, talks about, she says, learning to be kind to ourselves, learning how to respect ourselves is important. The reason it's important is that fundamentally, when we look into our own hearts and begin to discover what is confused and what is brilliant, what is bitter and what is sweet, it isn't just ourselves that we're discovering. It's the universe. And so it's personal and not. And so this is part of the wonderful aspect, I think, about sharing our experiences, is that we don't feel isolated and alone in them so much anymore. And we can hopefully begin to know what is real and how that's different from what is true. Lanny, did you have something you want? Okay. What I'd love to do, thank you, is a little bit of walking outside. Or inside if you choose to stay in. So walking... Are you ready? That's great. You know, things like standing up, walking, they're so common that we sometimes don't really notice how we're doing it. And so part of practice is really paying attention to things that we've become very accustomed to and attuned to, and maybe disattuned to, might be the better word. But staying in the body and being with whatever we're feeling and sensing is really a practice. It's not an easy practice. So we want to be able to experiment with it in lots of different ways, and especially in ways that we can carry out and do, you know, in our normal waking hours. And one is walking. And so generally when we're walking, we're not really sensing our feet that much. We're not generally very in our bodies. And I don't mean that as a criticism. It took me probably, well, I'm not going to tell you how many years. It took me many years to have my head, my mind on top of my body, being with what my body was doing at the same time when I was doing walking meditation. And I remember I was outside of London in my teacher, Ajahn Amaro's monastery, Amravati, walking the same paths that I had over and over and over again for many, many years, many times, in this field, this pasture. And all of a sudden, I was like, it was like my head was actually literally attached to my body. It was in sync. My mind was in sync with my body. It was exactly where my body was, right in what my body was doing at that moment. Now the contrast was, and then it made me realize that, and I was ecstatic actually. It felt blissful to actually be that connected after all these years. So we always can discover something new. But what I noticed was, one of the insights from that was that I was generally at the end of the path mentally and energetically before I'd gotten to the end. That's why I make a joke about being out the door. So when you're walking, you might notice that you're planning being home. You're planning what you have to do for work or for your kids or your spouse or something, yourself. That you're at that tree where you know you're going to turn around already, and you're thinking, how am I going to turn around? Oh, and then there's this and that and the other thing. So you're just not quite in sync. And that's normal to notice. What's not so helpful is to think that we are and just think that we are. So there's a difference, again, between thinking and being. So my challenge to you is that it's just like in formal meditation when we're sitting and practicing. As soon as we notice that we've wandered out of the present moment, so let's say breath was our anchor in a formal sitting practice, mindfulness of breath, and eventually we're going to notice, oh, well, I'm not on my breath anymore. I don't even remember when the last time was I really registered a breath. I've been thinking, you know, who knows, 10 minutes, let's say. But that moment that we recognize that is a moment that we just woke up to it. Right? So that's an awakening moment. That's we just woke up. That's great. Ding, 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 ding. Bell goes. You get a little bit of a gold star. And then you come back. Well, just like we do that in sitting meditation or seated meditation, we want to do that when we're walking. So you'll be walking. And it's, I think, helpful if you choose a little path, like 15 paces or something like that, rather than random. But if you want to walk randomly, that's your choice. You want to do what works for you to actually, you know, pay attention. But when you're walking, you might notice that all of a sudden, you know, and it's okay to notice the trees and the smells and the birds and whatever, or your thoughts. But as soon as you do, I want you to stop. Stand for a moment. Drop down and in. Get to your body. Feel your feet if you can. Before you start again. So just like we habituize or condition ourselves to do that while we're formally sitting with breath, for instance, come back to the breath, come back to the breath, come back to the breath over and over until we can actually stay with breath for longer periods of time or stay with something for longer periods of time, I want you to try to do that while you're walking. So don't judge or criticize. It's not a problem. But just stop for a moment. Take a breath or two, drop into your body, feel your feet, see if there's any tension anywhere. If there is, if you can relax it as best you're able, and then begin again, okay? So similar approach to a different technique. So now we're going to be walking rather than sitting. Does that make sense? Any questions about that? Okay, so we're going to walk for 20 minutes, so the bell will ring. Don't go too far away, please. The bell will ring 10 minutes. Let's do 5 minutes before we're to come back in. Okay, so when you hear the bell, please begin to make your way back in. Now, here's another interesting thing to play with, is that and hopefully you can think of this as an experiment. When you're coming back in, notice how that changes your cadence, where your mind is, what your body is doing. Because you'll probably, you know, okay, oh, I gotta hit the bathroom, or I better get a drink, or maybe I'll have a tea, or I'm gonna go back to my chair, or whatever. But you'll be already doing something mentally that you're not doing physically. Catch yourself, because that's the time that you wake up. Catch it, stop. You're gonna have 5 minutes to get back, so it's okay. Notice, and then continue on your way. Okay, so we're going to catch these little habits that we have. You can laugh if you want. You know, be curious about them. Have a little bit of lightness around them. They're not that serious. And then we'll be back here in 20 minutes, okay? So I'd like to slide right into another practice. Sometimes being outside or just doing a walking practice is settling. And that's not the only reason that we do walking, but it can be part of the reason that we do walking meditation. It's helpful to move the body, to get some air. And it's also helpful to begin to instigate these pauses so that during our normal daily activities, that becomes more and more familiar as far as territory goes. So you can use, stopping and dropping down, dropping in as you go to your car, or if you're walking from one end of a hallway to another, or for those of you who are clinicians, just doing a little walk in between your clients. Teach in hospitals a lot, and there's, it's quite busy and there are a lot of things at stake. If you're working in a hospital and before you gel in, or as you're gelling in to go into one room and then gelling out and then gelling in, that can be a time to drop and pause and instigate some mindfulness of the body. Or just to know that you can start again. I think that's also a very important aspect of what we're doing is the generosity of practice that allows us to begin again every time we notice maybe that we've gotten lost, or that maybe we're not really in the present moment, or maybe we're not really in our body. And just knowing that's okay to begin again. I mean, what I like to think of is, wow, I get to take another breath. That can be pretty cool. And sometimes you don't really feel that way, I know that. But the opportunity to begin again with every breath is always present. So speaking of breath, breath can be a very revealing partner to awareness, or is a partner of awareness, and is awareness. So wherever we imagine that we're breathing, we're bringing awareness there. Wherever we're breathing, or how we're breathing, is going to give us a clue to where our awareness is. So it's a little bit of both or either. It's an and or situation. It's never just one way or another. So for instance, as you're listening to me, you might be thinking about that, and I can tell, because sometimes when we're thinking, our eyes go up or over to the side. You ever notice that? And if you're thinking, can you notice where you're breathing at the same time as thinking? Usually not. So as you're listening to me, can you notice, and your eyes are opened, I think, unless you're falling asleep, which I know it is 4:00 in the afternoon and it's starting to get dark a little. But as your eyes are newly opened, since I pointed that out, can you sense where your breath is as you're listening to me? Where did your eyes go when you sensed your breath? Could anybody feel your eyes went down, or you look off to the side or something like that? Some of us need to close our eyes to notice where our breath is, right? So this is like the inner and outer awareness that we can cultivate. So you can be noticing where you're breathing as you're looking at me. It's the same sort of skill set. As noticing different sensations in your body as you're speaking or listening. It's the same skill set. Maybe not right this second, but definitely within your capacity. But when we're learning something, sometimes we have to pay a little bit more attention to it and rearrange ourselves, you know, a number of times until it becomes something that we can just pull. Or what I like to think of sometimes is that some of these practices that I've learned, fortunately, have they're fortunately so in me that when the rubber hits my road, they're there. I don't have to say, oh, please practice, help me. You know, it's just in me now. You know, a lot of these things that I have worked to develop and cultivate over the years. So why is it interesting to notice where your breath is? Because then you can put it where you want it to be, generally. And breath and awareness are like two wings of a bird. So where you imagine, again, to say this again, where you imagine you're breathing, you may not be at literally breathing, but what you're doing is you're bringing your consciousness, your attention, your hopefully kind awareness in any case, hopefully it's kind as well, to a particular area of your body on purpose. And it often will feel like you're breathing in there, even though logistically we know we're not. So breath is only happening, well, not only, but primarily happening in the lungs, right? But as you're sitting here right now, imagine that you're breathing into your right hand. Imagine that you're breathing in and out of your heart center. Imagine breathing in and out through your ears. Could you feel anything with one of those suggestions? Maybe not yet, but you can. Because really, what are we doing when we imagine breathing somewhere? Is we're just bringing awareness there, and awareness changes everything. Awareness is consciousness. Awareness is the mind. And I'd like to bring in the heart with that. So it's awareness is the heart mind. And awareness is also energy. Consciousness is energy. And I don't mean, you know, like woo-woo energy, but energy, there's energy in it. And that's why we can feel it. That's often why we can feel it. Like sometimes imagining breathing into your hand or a hand can bring some heat. Did anybody feel that? Or tingling or just some sensation. Imagining that you're breathing in and out through your ears is a way to experience something that's actually already happening, which is the skull diaphragm. So there's lots of really interesting aspects to imagining that you're breathing somewhere. And specifically to what we've been doing today is that when we start to sensitize ourselves a little bit more to the body and notice the resonance of what we're saying or what we're hearing or what we're reading or what we're experiencing in the body, the emotional aspects of being in the body, emotional, mental, then we eventually can pause, draw ourselves down and in, and attend to what it is that we're noticing. So for instance, now we get into working with emotions in the body. So in the dyad practice, we noticed that, some of you noticed that there was an association between what you were listening to or what you were hearing or what you were saying and some sensations in the body. Or as one person noted, that when she's triggered, she gets a little bit tight in the chest area. Or when, you know, you're with your familiar emotions, you probably now know how they feel. Yeah? Maybe not in the moment, but certainly at some point when you think about, well, what does anger feel like? What does frustration feel like? What does self-consciousness feel like? What does jealousy feel like? What does sadness feel like? What does happiness feel like? What does joy feel like? We can sense all these things in our body. And sometimes we want to sense them and not think about them. We don't want to pour fuel on an emotional fire if we can help it. And so one way to quell emotional fire is to attend to it without the story involved in it. So we don't need to think about it. We already know it in a lot of cases, yeah? Each of us has some emotions that maybe arise more than others. You've probably noticed that about yourself. And it's not that we want to do something all the time around what we're noticing, but we want to be able to be with and in heightened times or acute times, especially in emotions that, with emotions that are strong, tend to take over and carry us away. And sometimes it is skillful to be able to do something with them that's not thinking, that's not indulging, that's not fueling them, making them stronger, louder, worse. And this is where breathing can come in. So when you're thinking, your breath will be reflecting thinking. Does anybody know what that feels like, or have you sensed that before? So when you're thinking about something, generally your breath is closer to your head. Generally, not always. I mean, we are so unique and creative. But generally, breath lifts up when we're thinking. That's generally why we lift up and out of the body, because the energy of the body with the breath is up higher. Now, that's not always the case. Like with sadness, when you're feeling sadness, your breath could be quite low and not very much of a breath at that. When you're anxious, what does breath feel like? Short, fast, tight maybe. When you're feeling fear, what happens to your breath? Gets held, yeah? Freezes, right? What about when you're angry, what's going on with your breath? Get it in the throat, throat tightens. Maybe your breath feels hot. Yeah. So we know these things, right? So rather than think about them and wonder why they're happening, and then even, you know, well, what could I do? What do I do? You know, just start analyzing or getting into the story of it. What we can do is attend to it in a somatic way, with imagination, with energy, with direction of awareness. And so that's what we're going to try. Okay? So we did the body as house, which involves a little bit of imagination, and sometimes not. I mean, you know, when you're traversing the inside of your body or getting to know it as your house, it eventually can become a home. But as you're getting to know your body as a house, you want to know, well, what's stashed and stored in there, so that when you choose to, when the time is right, either with somebody or by yourself, you go back in and you start to rearrange or give away or do some spring cleaning or a little dusting or what have you, so that the whole body eventually becomes more and more comfortable territory. That's when it becomes your home. And a lot of that can be with breath. So we're going to imagine breathing different places, I'm going to guide you through that, just to see how this can work. Now, I don't want you to necessarily think of the emotion that usually carries you away, but if you can, think of an emotion that you're not that comfortable with, but is comfortable enough to work with it here. Okay? Is that distinction clear? So I don't want to cause any real discomfort here. So I don't want you to think about your strongest emotions, but maybe just a little bit of an emotion that you'd like to experiment with. And really, this can be something pleasant and it can be something unpleasant. Because like I said earlier, not all of us can hold the pleasant easily. It can almost be too much, you know. So choose an emotion that you feel, that you know gets represented somatically in your body. Like it could be tightening of the throat or of the chest or the belly, the diaphragm, tensing of the shoulders, just some aspect of an emotion that shows up in your body. It should be a familiar tune by now. And often it's suggested that we walk right into that, face it directly. And that is one way to be with things. But sometimes we need to softly surround something. It's like letting go of the conceptual hand, or at least opening it. It's like holding the striker not so tightly, but just enough to hold it. And so as you're imagining this area of your body and the way that it's manifesting an emotion, just see if you get a sense of what it does or what it might be doing now, even if you feel it now. Like a tightening or a tingling, or even sometimes a numbness, a burn. Burning sensation, a form of contraction. And imagine that wherever this area is that you're sensing is manifesting an emotion, imagine that you can open all the windows all around that area. And that when the windows begin to open, you can feel a breeze. And this breeze can come in from any natural environment that feels nourishing and comforting to you. For instance, the breeze or the wind can come in over the mountains or through a forest of trees. Or from the ocean, or somewhere coming down from the sky. And so the windows that are opening are just the sense of the breeze or the wind begins to softly surround the area of your body that you feel the discomfort or the contraction, the closing down, the holding back. And it doesn't go into the center point of the sensations, but it just encircles it. And so if it's in your throat, for instance, then the skin around your neck can start to soften with this breeze. And then maybe some of the muscles of the neck can begin to relax. And so that you're not holding that area, wherever it is, as tightly as you have been. But the grip relaxes. The contraction softens just a bit with this breeze, this wind that encircles. It could even be like the mist, like the fog. And so it's just entering in from all directions and slowly, slowly just dissipating a little of the tension. Breathing in and softening, releasing so that there's just a bit more space around the area. Maybe not right in it, but around it. And this breeze, this wind, is something that we're breathing in and breathing out at all times because we're breathing in nature and we are nature. But we add the benefit of our imagining the nourishment, the special nutrients from a place that we really enjoy. The ocean, the mountains, forest. Could even be bringing in clouds, blue sky. And so that as we breathe in to this particular area around it, letting the windows open, breathing in, all the nutrients that are carried along and in the breath that we're imagining or the breeze or the wind begin to start to infiltrate, nourish and renew, soften, dissolve just a little bit any tension that might be around this area. And when you breathe out now, imagine that you're breathing out what isn't helpful in this area of your body anymore, whatever that is. It's just very, very tender, very soft, like a wind. Not forceful. Now begin to breathe into this area and pause for a moment and hold that breath with the nutrition, the nutrients, the healing benefits. Allow it a moment or two to be absorbed before you breathe out. So there's the inhalation and the bringing in of the nourishment, the nutrients, the renewing energy, the softening around. There's a pause and absorption. Allow the body to really assimilate. And then there's a breathing out after that pause. And this can be an opportunity to let things be aired out. Let things go. Then we breathe out, let go. And then we pause again. After the exhalation, there's just a tiny little bit of a rest or a respite. Softening, relaxing the nervous system. And then we breathe in again and we imagine the breath, the breeze, the wind. Pause, let it be absorbed. 1, 2, 3 seconds. Breathe out and let go. Softly, letting go. And then pausing and resting, doing nothing. 1, 2, or 3 seconds before we breathe in again. Long, slow inhalation of breeze and wind. Pausing, absorbing. A little bit of a slower exhale, releasing. Letting go, and then a rest. See if you can imagine and practice with these four distinct parts of breath. Just attending to a part of your body that could use some loving kindness, some care, some renewal. Place that has been holding for you for a while. I offer it a chance to let go. At least have a little bit more space. And little by little, maybe you feel the space. The body expands. the tension can dissipate just a little bit. Now imagine breathing in and sweeping your whole body, either from your feet up to your head or your head down towards your feet, whatever direction feels comfortable for you. Just sweep the body clear with this breeze, this wind, this purposeful breath. Taking in just a little more, but very, very softly. Pausing, absorbing, assimilating, exhaling, letting go, fully breathing out, pausing and resting. Let the nervous system rest. So nice, long breath of breeze or wind, filling, and softening the body so that you can fill even more. And then pausing and holding, absorbing, and then breathing out, completely letting go of the breath, making space, and then resting for a moment before you breathe in. Soothing the nervous system, relaxing all around the parameters of the body or even inside, bringing in the nourishment and nutrients of the breeze and the wind. One more long, slow, complete inhale and exhale. And when you're ready, let your eyes slowly drift open. Don't move your body too much yet, because what I'd like you to notice is where your attention is, what your body feels like, what your mind and heart feel like now when you have your eyes open, so that you really get to know, become more familiar with what that just did. Whatever it was. And then begin to look up a little bit higher towards me. Because you may notice that in order to have your eyes open and really sense inside, sometimes it's helpful to keep the gaze cast down a little. Yeah, or even close the eyes. And that's fine. And then eventually you start practicing lifting the gaze. And still continuing to notice what's going on inside. And that might take a little time, but it's available. So when we imagine, because you were bringing in some imagination there, right, to imagine a particular environment that you find nourishment in, whether it be the beach, you know, from the ocean, or the forest, trees, or mountain, or even, you know, clouds from the sky. That takes a little bit of imagination, so for those of you who think you don't have imagination, I think it just depends on what you're trying to imagine. But we appreciate nature, and it can be a metaphor as well. And it takes a little bit of concentration to imagine breathing in that breeze or opening the windows and surrounding an area, right? So you had to concentrate. And as I kept you in it for a little while, I was asking you to attend to it, to keep doing it. And I gave you a little bit more detail, which were the four parts. So there was the inhale, bringing in. There was the pause, the absorption. There was the exhale, letting go. There was the moment, the pause of pure rest. And so by inviting you, whether you were able to do it today or not, but by inviting you to pay attention in that way, what I was inviting you to do was concentrate. And to take the energy of the thinking mind into the being, or, you know, more in the somatic aspect of the body. So out of thoughts about an emotion into reckoning with the experience of it somatically. And it's not to downplay the reasons why we might have certain strong emotions at all. And it's also not to negate our feelings and thoughts. But it is to add a tool that when we need them, when we need, especially like this one, when we need it, and we've run around the same block a million times and we've been triggered, or we know this reaction, or this emotion is really familiar territory for us. Once we know that, then creating just another cycle of thinking is not necessarily always going to be the most helpful, but working in the body can be. Because remember that the body stores all thoughts and emotions that aren't fully cognized. And so there's a lot of stuff stored in here, usually from the neck down, for a variety of good reasons, a lot of times. How we work with what's stashed and stored can be many ways, but what we generally forget about is that we want to attend to the storage, not the reasons why, or to the stored. And one of the ways, one of the better ways that we can attend to the body is to work visually, somatically, to release the energy, the contraction, the holding on, the clinging of that conceptual hand, if you will. And then that dissipates it from the mind. By attending to the body, you attend to the root. Without having to think about it. So we want to be able to process, but we also want to attend to things in the body somatically to release them fully. And that's one way you can do it. And all the things that we've done so far are ways that you can do that. Did you have a question? Can you wait for a mic? Thank you.
So not to oversimplify, but if we had to say that the goal of most of what we're doing is the contraction, is we're trying to get the contraction to release, so that if we could like move our nose and all the contraction released, then that would be good enough. I mean, is that...
Yeah.
Is the contraction the heart of the matter here?
I think it is most of the matter, yes. And it goes to what I was referring to about clinging. Is we tend to have a fixed view, a fixed body, a fixed feeling about, or fixed feelings about things. That fixed means contraction. It means clinging, holding on to. An attachment to, whoop, want to hold it as long as I can. Or a pushing away. I want to hold it back, get it away. And so between those two pushes and pulls, there's a lot of discomfort. Now, yeah, you can carry that further into why we do that and how to work with expectations, how to work with behavioral patterns, etc. But essentially, what we find over and over again is that when the body is soft, we feel better. I don't mean like, you know, falling apart soft, but soft, not in a state of contraction anywhere. We feel better. When the heart is soft and open, we feel better. When the mind is open, we feel better. When the mind gets tight and spins itself around something, we feel that. It's uncomfortable. When the heart is tight, we're shut down. When the body is contracted, doesn't feel good either. And so there's always going to be something that's going to create some discomfort in life. I mean, that's just the way it is. But we don't need to tighten around it. And I think that's the somatic key is right there. So you nailed it, really. If we can find space around discomfort, no matter whether it's physical, emotional, or mental, or all wrapped up into one, which a lot of times it is, then that's part of letting go. And actually, that is letting go. And I have this quote from Hermann Hesse. Says, some of us think holding on makes us strong, but sometimes it is letting go. And so the body, the heart, and the mind really appreciate and celebrate space. Space and softness. It gives us room to let things come and go. So what we're working with directly today is the body and the holding on tightly, which contains an emotion, keeps it fueled, doesn't allow it to have its moment, its say, and then leave. So thank you. So, the visualization process is very, very important. However that might manifest for you. Because what we visualize leads us, right? It's like intention. Intention leads us towards something that hopefully is more skillful, more beneficial. We have to have intention in order to continue to grow. Like a spiritual practice begins with an intention to practice, doesn't it? And I think we all want to be more and more free, more liberated, more open to what is, because we can't control what is. We can't control the world, but we can be with the world as best as possible, at least for short periods. And then longer and longer periods. You know, we live in a what's called an interesting time, needless to say. So we have the choices that we have are around how we hold what is, not necessarily what is. Anybody else have a question? Or yes, you have a, are you stretching or that's a?
No, it's a comment. I guess an observation.
Okay, hang on.
I just thank you for today, and it was great for me personally, and also. I've been a long-time yoga practitioner. The physical side, it started with the physical practice of yoga, and now it's more branches. I think I know you from the yoga room in Berkeley, maybe?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. anyway, I've been a restorative yoga teacher for maybe 8 years, and then my husband, who's a multi-instrumentalist musician, got me into sound healing about 6 years ago, and I do a lot of it now. Like, we work for the hospital with cancer support and all kinds of things. But this is just bringing, I just want to make a comment. It's so clear to me how the sound just goes into the body and physically moves energy.
That's right.
Because we've just, it's almost like we can't even keep up with the requests. We just went on a tour around the South and, you know, it's interesting how it's affecting people.
Sure.
And coming from a long period of yoga and restorative yoga, it's so much more pronounced, the sound.
You know, well, something we can relate to. Everybody can relate to.
Right. And it physically goes in the body. Is that, do you have anything to?
Yeah. I mean, everything goes in the body.
Right.
So the thing is that this is why I keep talking about it as resonance. Because the news has a resonance in our bodies, but we don't normally notice that. We notice our reaction to it, our mental, emotional reaction to it. But if you really want to up your practice, watch the news and stay in your body. It's a great challenge. It's a really big challenge. I choose who I'm going to look at when I'm watching the news. Like, there's one person, quite a few people that I really don't want to watch. But when I do, I honestly use it as practice because, you know, I mean, it's frightening and maddening. And if we can sense what that's doing in our bodies at that moment, then that's exactly what we need to be sensing all the time to greater and lesser degrees, right? So what you'll feel is some movement in your body, whether it's a shutting down, a tightening up, you know, something like a vibration, a tingle or burn, you know, heat or coolness, something like that. You'll get some sensations, and that's some movement, that's a vibration, that's a resonance, and you want to attend to it while it's happening or shortly thereafter, so that it's not stuck staying in there and then we start covering it over like with a little crust. We do that pretty easily. So it is vibration, and I think that that's partially why we respond so well to music and sound. Because it energy is vibration, you know, and we are made of matter. We're not solid. We're a bunch of buzz. Never said it like that before. That might sound a little ridiculous, but what the heck. But we are vibration, essentially, and we know that from quantum physics, and we know that from science, you know. So to think that we're one solid mass is really unrealistic, not true. Might feel like that, which is the real, feels real, but it's not true. So I'm not surprised. I think it's a beautiful gift. Yes. The holder of the mic gets to ask a question.
I just wanted to ask, like, so what if you feel energy all the time? Then what? I mean, we're talking about the experience of within.
Mm-hmm.
But what about external? Because brought up sound.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, what if you feel energies from your surroundings? Or
right, right. So you're more permeable and sensitive to that, you mean?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Well, that's an interesting challenge because I think this is why we want to connect not just to the body but to the earth. So what we notice is that when we're really sensitive and attuned in different ways, that there's always something coming in and coming at us, right? So what brings you down to the earth, to the present moment, can be maybe just sensing your feet. But it can also be relaxing your belly, because again, what will happen is if we're, you know, if there's too much going on, what we do is we lift up, we lift out, and it's like, whoa, almost like a shutter in a way. And so releasing the pelvic bowl area and the pelvic floor area, which is something that I do teach about, but not today, is something that's very helpful because it releases the energy down towards the earth and into the body, as opposed to lifting up towards the head. So those are a couple of things that you can do. And also not dislike yourself for it, because that sensitivity has a lot of beauty in it. You know, but it also is hard to hold sometimes.
Yeah, I feel like you said bring the attunement back into the body, mm-hmm. Back to the awareness. I feel like you said, I've heard you say kind awareness, mm-hmm. and then heart mind.
Yeah. So a lot of times what we think of as consciousness or awareness is just the mind. And I would just suggest heart mind, you know, and I didn't make that up. There's a Japanese word for heart mind, and I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's something like kokoro, something like that. And one of my teachers, Ajahn Amaro's talk, I got it from him mainly, is that, you know, we're listening to the heart. The heart is what is attuned. The heart is what is aware. And so it's almost as if the way I experienced it was just shifting my perspective out of the more hard-thinking mind, which is what I was experiencing. That's not always the truth of it, but I was experiencing thinking about things. And what I wanted to do was more feel the experience of things. So I held that differently, and it really changed my perceptions and softened my hard edge. I still have a little edge, you know, but I come from New York.
So my burning question that's very short is we've been talking about experiencing emotions in the body, and I feel like a lot of this is connected to the trauma-informed yoga workshop that I went to. And is this connected or linked to the nervous system and the reaction?
Okay. Yes. And there's lots of different ways to work with trauma. Somebody's buzzing. Is that me? Ah, yeah, my boyfriend has a hearing aid. Yes, and so there's lots of different ways to work with trauma. Fortunately. Yeah. But I'm sure it's similar, although I don't necessarily know the school that you're coming from, but I'm familiar. Yeah. Yeah, anybody else have something? Oh, yeah, we have a few. Do you want to go first since you're holding the mic?
Yeah, I just wanted to add, as you were talking about contraction, you know, the contraction and holding, you know, bringing in and pushing away, it reminded me of a quote that I always go back to, mm-hmm. you know, again, in my physical practice and when I'm teaching, and it comes from Eric Franklin. If you don't know of him, you should look him up. He's amazing. He does a lot of myofascial release, and and he says that tension is the opposite of balance, and that in your body, your balance is actually wobbles, right? Mm-hmm. So as you release that tension, you start to wobble. And those wobbles get smaller and smaller and smaller until they become microscopic, and that's what your balance is. Hmm. And that was just
neat.
Something that really resonated when you were saying
yeah,
that.
Yeah, thank you. That's great. Behind you?
Hi. Hi. Thank you for all of this.
You're welcome.
My question is sort of, my experience of it has been sort of grounding and going internal, and I'm wondering now, like, as we practice with this and we become more attuned to our sort of internal experiences, like how to sort of communicate from that space, sort of how to come back.
That's a great question.
Thank you. Cool.
Yeah. That's part two of this, but kind of it is. Well, as we condition ourselves, like, for instance, to open the eyes and still sense internal sensation or sensation in the body, open the eyes and still be able to tell where our breath is, you know, when I would talk you into opening your eyes, and then lifting the gaze a little and still being able to sense what's going on, and then lifting the gaze even more, and then actually doing that while you're walking, while you're in conversation, which is why we practice that dyad. That's not easy to do. So you keep practicing that, and then it just becomes natural for you. So as I'm talking to you, I can sense my body wherever I want to now. And I'm not saying that like, oh, wow, Jill, you're so cool. But I have spent decades doing it because I needed to. I needed to be in my body. It wasn't in my body at all. And so it's just something that I know can be cultivated and procured. And the reason that I started teaching, you know, 3 decades ago was because of the possibilities, the value of being internally aware as you're in the world is endless for self-regulation, for resilience, it's emotional intelligence, it's mindfulness, it's kindness in action, it's all sorts of things. It works with the nervous system, it works with the mind, which is the nervous system as well, but the heart, the body, it's, you know, it's limitless what we can do with internal awareness. And so when the rubber hits the road is when we're doing something like paying attention on purpose to the body and the sensations of the body as we're talking to each other or as we're watching the news. I mean, that's a real big one. But just even walking, you know, just walking around and dropping down and in. Over time, that just becomes what you know. So we imagine, we have intention, we continue to practice, there's repetition. And then before we know it, wow, I can actually do all these things. And then we know the gifts of them. Yeah. Thank you. It's a great question. There was another hand up.
Do you have a website?
Hang on. Yeah. So the question was, do I have a website? Yeah, I do. I have a website. I work, it's my name, jillsatterfield.org. And I do work with individuals. I'm in Berkeley, but I do you know, online, FaceTime, Zoom, like most of us do nowadays, even old-fashioned telephone calls, and I see people in my home. but there are also resources on my website, like recordings, similar to what we did today. They're free to download. There are talks. And I work a lot with clinicians. I have a couple groups of clinicians in the East Bay, and I'm starting one online to integrate these kinds of practices into clinical work, for yourself, first of all, but then also into clinical work. So the applications of the practices are what I'm mainly interested in, working with pain, chronic pain, with illnesses, with trauma, with addictions, with anxiety, depression, the things that catch us, that hold us tightly. Sometimes we get caught and stuck in them, so there's just a lot we can do if we care to. So, yeah, I have a website. Yes.
No, thank you for everything. I think one of the things that's been an obstacle for me, both with meditation and awareness practices and yoga, is that as someone with asthma who has problems breathing, it's honestly not a very grounding practice for me to try to breathe. So sometimes I've tried instead to do walking meditations.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering what you think for people who struggle with breathing issues, kind of how we still bring these practices in.
Yeah. Well, you don't have to focus, and you shouldn't focus on breath if you have an issue with it. You know, because that just heightens it and makes it worse. It's like when you're having a little bit of a panic attack or a full-blown anxiety attack and someone says, just breathe. You're like, well, I can't. You know, it's not the right time to suggest that. But I would go into sensations, other sensations, like the sensations in your feet or your legs or your scalp or even notice sound. different sounds that are around you. Because that's why, you know, I was sort of mentioning that sometimes we don't want to go directly into something. Because when we really turn our attention toward it, it heightens it. And if it's something that's uncomfortable or acute, that may not be the right thing to do. And so we want to have the ability to turn towards or turn away from, depending what is skillful or unskillful, helpful or harmful. And that's part of what mindfulness opens us to, is having that ability to make choices about what would be the best in the situation or the environment or the condition that we're in. And it doesn't always look the same. And that's why imagination, that's why different kinds of practices are absolutely important, so that we have as many skillful means as possible. Yeah. Thanks. Okay, one more question.
I just wanted to comment. Can you hear me? Mm-hmm. Okay. I just wanted to comment how your visualization was so powerful. That last one here, it's the last of the day. Isn't that weird? You know, we should be all ready to go at 10 o'clock. Or maybe it just took me that long to be here. But it was so incredible to take that emotion. It was so clear for me. And then to open the windows, and that, and then to breathe in whatever that, you know, ocean or mountains, and then that, which I've done breathing exercises before, but then to, you know, to breathe in and hold and nourish, mm-hmm. I love that, and to exhale and pause and rest mm-hmm. was so beautiful for me. It was an amazing experience. Something
that's
I
great.
Wanted to share that happened for me, and my emotion was, you know, I have dread, you know, and I can really visualize it. And I didn't want to do anything too heavy, you know,
right?
But you know, I always want to, like, okay, gotta fix it, right? You gotta like burst through, or let's do a visualization of sandblasting it through, so that, you know. Oh my God. And I thought it was so nice to give the space of, you don't have to do anything, you can just circle around it,
right?
And I love that, giving it space.
That's good, because that's kindness.
It's kind, yeah. And I really like that. I'm a body worker, and you know, so you're trying all sorts of things to let mm-hmm. to try mm-hmm. to breathe, visualization,
right,
shaking, you know, there's all sorts of pressure points, mm-hmm, all sorts mm-hmm. of things and ways to do that, but you're always trying for a goal, and sometimes you just gotta let it be.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and kindness can also show up in different ways, you know. So one of the things, I'm glad you said that, because one of the not so obvious ways to be kind to ourselves is to actually breathe softly. Softly. Because when we're being harsh, we don't breathe softly. We either hold our breath or we force it. You know, it's like a strong breath, right? A really strong, like maybe a tornado type breeze. Well, not breeze, but wind. So the softer the breath, because of the inextricable link between mind and breath, between consciousness and breath, the softer we breathe, the softer the mind, softer the heart, the softer the body. It just all goes together. And so some of us really enjoy a metta practice, a loving kindness practice, where we're imagining, you know, it is visual, or it can be visual, and repeating phrases to ourselves, to others. But we can also do something similar with breath. So there are a lot of different somatic, felt sense sort of practices that aren't necessarily the ones that we've been taught before. We just have to uncover them, right?
I really like what you said about, I think it was Frankl or
Viktor Frankl, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I've heard that quote of God or higher power or the universe or whatever you choose to call the mystery, is in the space between the breaths.
Mm. Yeah, lovely.
Mind me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hopefully there was something that you can take home with you and work with. And, you know, because I've been doing this kind of day-long for many years, I recently started to do something new, and I want to offer this to you. Because it seems sometimes that we come in for a day or weekend or even do retreat, and then we go home, and then same old, same old. And, you know, whether we've appreciated something or something even might not be appreciated, we generally don't check back with the teacher and let them know, right? Especially if you didn't care for something, you don't call up and say, oh, I didn't like that. But what I'd like to offer you is a thread, and that is, if you care to, practice one thing that we've done today and see how it works for you or doesn't, then I would like to offer you a half-hour consultation free of charge so that we can discuss it. Not only do I feel that I can help you follow through with it, maybe rearrange it, hold it differently, or let it go, but it also helps me. Because I'm teaching this for you, not for myself. I know these practices, you know, and I know they help me. That's why I want to share them. But sometimes I don't know how things land, and so you could let me know, because it helps me to improve. It helps me get better at what I offer. And I, you know, because I see you and you nod or you look like you're bored or whatever, but I don't really know what's going on. So I would like to know. So if that's something that you would like to do, then all I really ask is that you practice something for 2 weeks, you know, at least a few times each week, not just once. And then you can find me on my website, email me, tell me that you came here today and that you'd like to set up a time, and I'd be happy to offer that to you. And also, I will, you know, I'm easily found on my website if you want to do anything one-on-one or small group setting. I'm available because, you know, we are in this together. We are in this life together. And it's sometimes finding out difficult ways, you know, going through some or a lot of suffering, that we find our way through and into ease and more joy and being with what is. And we need to support each other with those things that we find. And that's what, you know, being a teacher is all about, really, for me. And so I do want to support you in any way that I can if you want to reach out to me. And I encourage you to support others with things that you've tried, that you have tried, so that we can work together as a world, as opposed to separately. So it's been really my pleasure to see some of you again, and to meet many of you that I don't know yet, and may that continue, may your practices continue to nourish you and support you in the best and worst of times. And I hope I get an opportunity to see you again. Yes. Yeah, we're wrapping up now.
Okay. Well, for some reason that...
Right. Right, thank you. So if you could take care of your props. What about cushions?
Thank you. The ones in front stay here, but anything else...
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.